The Fan on Demand. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome to UFC Central. I am your host, Showdown Joe, for the next hour. We're going to talk some mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. As always, the boys behind the glass, Danny Ricciu, all dressed up with his collar hanging out of his nice sweater. And, of course, Igor Enriquez today dressed in a T-shirt, hat on backwards, baseball hat on backwards. I don't know what to expect from this guy anymore. But he put together a fantastic show. He will kick things off with Hands of Stone, Sam Stout. He will join us momentarily. We'll also hear from UFC Director of Operations for Canada, New Zealand, and Australia, Mr. Tom Wright. He will talk about next week's show in Winnipeg, as will Sam Stout. And, of course, we'll talk about Bill S-209 being passed in the House of Commons. Mixed martial arts officially is legal in all 10 provinces and territories and all that jazz in the country of Canada. We'll also hear from my very good friend Damon Martin from the Bleacher Report. We'll discuss all the ins and outs of all the headlines of a crazy week that was. Last week was crazy with the whole Miesha Tate stuff jumping onto the Ultimate Fighter. This week was crazy with UFC 161 losing their co-main event with Shogun and Nogueira. And, of course, Chael Sonnen tried to step in. That didn't happen. That gets moved over to as the new main event now for the UFC on Fox Sports 1 show going down in mid-August. But we'll get to that a little bit later on with Damon Martin from the Bleacher Report. But kick things off, we will start off with London, Ontario's finest, although I'm sure Mark Kominick and Hordeski and Clemens might say otherwise, but London, Ontario's finest lightweight, Sammy Hands of Stone Stout. Sammy, what's going on, my man?
Hey, what's happening, Joe?
Well, first things first, thanks for joining us, because you were just on a couple of weeks ago and we were talking about Isaac Valley Fly, your opponent for UFC 161, and next thing you know, he gets injured. In comes in James Krause. Talk to me when you first got the news that this injury took place and now you have a new opponent.
You know, I try not to let it faze me too much. You know, James Krause is a much different opponent, but, you know, I'm a veteran. I've been in the sport for a long time. I realize that injuries are, you know, part of the game. You know, we can see that with the with this card, you know, some of the main event and the co-main event. So I didn't let it faze me too much. You know, I've only got 2.5 weeks to get ready for James Krause and put a game plan together. But he's only got 2.5 weeks to get ready for me, and it's going to be his first, you know, first time in the big show. So I think he's got it a little tougher than I do.
Yeah, he's a WC veteran, and the one thing, the theme of all these types of fights whenever guys take short-notice fights is, oh, man, he's taking on Sam Stout. He is in big trouble. Sam Stout, legit UFC veteran, been around the game for 10 years. James Krause, you know, he reached a pretty high point in terms of competing for the WEC, but now he's got to come in there and take on Sam Stout. But the same can be said for yourself, because now you've been preparing for Isaac, and now you have a brand-new opponent where there's limited video of the guy. It's also difficult for you.
Yeah. It's definitely you know, it's not an ideal situation, but like I said, I've been doing this a long time, and it's one thing I've learned over the years is, you know, sometimes you got to roll with the punches. You know, that no pun intended, but you know, he's gonna have his hands full. He's gonna be in there. He's gonna be hungry. He's riding a 7-fight win streak into this fight. So you know, I'm expecting, you know, him to be tough and him to be ready.
The one thing I get from a lot of the fighters, especially at the elite level in the UFC, is, you know, how dare this guy accept this fight for me? But then again, James Krause has never competed for the UFC, so it didn't matter who they put in front of him, he was going to accept that fight. Do you ever feel like that? Like, how dare this guy accept this fight against me?
No, I don't feel like that. You know, I know how it is for being a younger guy trying to, you know, he's been trying to work his way into the UFC for quite some time. He tried out for the Ultimate Fighter show. He's been trying to break in there for a long time. So, you know, if I was him, I would jump at any opportunity. If I was trying to get in the UFC and they said they wanted me to fight, you know, Ben Henderson, I would be taking it, you know, just to get my foot in the door. So, you know, I'm sure that's kind of what his mindset is.
Now, you take a look at a guy like Krause in comparison to Isaac Valley Flag. In my opinion, and we all know, I mean, anything can happen in a fight. We can say all we want about, you know, when two guys step into a cage. I don't think this guy's going to want to stand and bang with you. Then again, this is like a mulligan for him. He's doing the UFC a favor. Maybe he will stand and bang with you. What do you envision James Krause come next Saturday night when the referee steps out of the way? What do you envision from this guy?
You know, from what I've seen, he likes to use his reach. You know, he's 6'2". He's got a 75-inch reach, you know, which is going to be, you know, four and a half inches longer than mine. So I think he's going to look to establish that reach early on. In his last fight, I managed to track down this last fight against Toby Amada, and he really used that reach effectively. So that's going to be my biggest issue to deal with. And you know, if it comes to a jiu-jitsu match or you know, if it hits the ground, I think his biggest threats are those, you know, Kimura or not Kimura's guillotines and darce chokes. You know, he's got those long arms. He'll even go for them standing up because he's got such a, you know, he's kind of above you all the time. So it's easy for him to just snap the head down and look for those chokes. So, you know, I'll be ready for those. And, you know, hopefully whatever else he has for me.
Based on my research, he likes that one arm in guillotine as well. So I'm wondering, do you play a tentative game if this guy tries to close the distance and just think, you know, get out of dodge if you get too close to the cage, or he's trying to stalk you down and getting close to the cage? Do you just get out of there or say, you know what, I've got cauliflower ears as well, we can do this as well?
Yeah, you know, I think I don't think I have to be too scared of him. I think I have to be cautious. You know, I've been doing this for long enough. I know how to defend a guillotine. It's, you know, I got to be careful. I got to be aware of it, but, you know, I don't think I need to completely stay away from, you know, clinching up with them on the cage or getting tied up with them. I think I can, you know, I think I'm strong enough and experienced enough that I can, you know, I can fight my way out of a few tough spots.
You're listening to Sam Hansa Stone Stout right here on UFC Central. You can follow Sammy online via Twitter at Sammy J Stout. Sammy, let me ask you this. The very first training session after you found out the news, does it get to a situation where you feel like you have to unmemorize what you were doing for Isaac Valley Flag? Or is it just, you know what, keep training what we're training, we're going to do it no matter who the opponent is?
You know, I don't think there's actually, the way I looked at it is, you know, you go from fighting a guy like Valley Flag who presses forward the whole time, tries to keep guys on his heels, and is really just in your face, you know. So what I was getting ready for, you know, the way I was preparing for that was to work on a lot of head movement and a lot of angles. A guy who wants to keep you on the end of his jab, the way I prepare for that is a lot of head movement and a lot of angles. So there's some things from the Valley Flag game plan that I can translate to the Krause game plan.
And nothing changes strength and conditioning-wise in terms of dealing with a taller opponent's got better reach. You just continue to do what you have to do to get the heart rate up and bring it down, bring it back up sort of thing?
Yeah, you know, it's conditioning is always something that I pride myself on. And, you know, I've been stepping it up through this camp. So you don't expect to see me slow down as the rounds go on in this fight.
You're still 29, but you've been around the game for a long time. How difficult is it nowadays to get that cardio up there as opposed to when you first debuted at 19 years old?
I've definitely had to step up my training, you know, cardio-wise. I've been doing a lot of, you know, and it's a little tougher on your body as you get older too, right? So I've been doing a lot of work in the pool to, you know, substituting runs for swims and stuff like that. And, you know, I've been a little bit more careful with, you know, just putting a pounding on my body and taking breaks when I need them, and, you know, doing different things to get all my cardio in and not just, you know, pounding pavement and running all the time. But, it's different, but I'm making it work.
TJ Grant actually was all over me. Not this last fight versus Gray Maynard, but I think two or three fights ago, may have been the Matt Wyman fight or the Evan Dunham fight, and he pulled me aside. He's like, look, man, this running on the pavement stuff doesn't work anymore. Swimming is what it's all about. Getting in the pool is what it's all about. Now that you mentioned that, can you talk about the difference, what it does for the body? A, obviously less pounding, but B, cardiovascular-wise?
You know, cardiovascular-wise, it's fantastic. You know, you have really you have to control your breathing or you're sucking in water, right? So it really gets you at a really constant rate of breathing and allows you to control your breathing and in turn control your heart rate. And, you know, it's so easy on your joints and it's so good for your mobility. It's really been a blessing for my training camps. I've been doing it for about the last 2 years now.
Yeah, I took up some swimming stuff. Anytime I love being on the road in a hotel that has a pool, because you'll find me in there and no longer on the Stairmaster or on the treadmill. Give me an example of what a pool workout is for Sam Stout.
You know what? I've actually been doing some stuff with my strength and conditioning coach Carter Walls, where we're doing you know, I'm using some resistance type things that I'm putting on my ankles and my wrists, and doing a bunch of exercises in the pool. So it's kind of strength training. And then I finish up with usually, you know, about 40 to 50 lengths of in the pool. So, it, you know, all told, it's about an hour in the water, and it's, you know, I feel drained after and exhausted, but I feel great at the same time, you know, and I've never gotten hurt doing it. And since I've been doing it, I've sustained way less injuries.
Now, Carter actually spoke to my agent, Chris Humphreys. I was with Chris yesterday on the links, and he mentioned, listen, Carter wants to know if he can come on the radio show to discuss strength and conditioning for mixed martial artists. And you know me, I'm like, no, I'm going to get Sammy's permission first, because I'm going to put Carter through some sort of heck. So should we have him on the show, and what benefit does he bring if we bring him on?
You know what? He definitely have him on the show. The guy's got a really, he's really got a different perspective on strength and conditioning than most guys that I've worked with. You know, I feel like there's a lot of guys that get you into these, you know, they have these great facilities, and they get you in there, and they just tell you to do hundreds of jump squats and you know, pushing sleds and doing all this stuff, and they're just trying to make you puke, and they don't really have a reason for some of the stuff they're doing other than just to run you into the ground. Carter, you know, takes a really scientific approach to what he's doing. Anything that he's making me do in the training room, if I ask him why I'm doing it, he's got an answer for me. He's not just saying, you know, it's not just a make you work till you puke type of workout. That being said, it is tough, and it's getting me in good shape, but it's also, you know, keeping my body in good shape, my joints in good shape, and adding a lot of like explosiveness and athleticism to my game that I didn't have before.
But what if he comes on and starts ripping apart my golf game? Because Carter is a master golfer. This guy should be on the PGA Tour.
He can. Well, sometimes they get away from him a little bit still, but he can hit the ball a mile, that's for sure.
Oh, he's got accuracy. And the one thing that I want to talk about, so I'm assuming he'll be in your corner, correct?
Yes, he will.
All right, and the other thing I want to talk about is you stole Mark Hominick away from me, because he was supposed to be my co-host this week, but because he's cornering you, or sorry, next week, he's cornering you. I can't get in. The UFC won't do it because it's a conflict of interest. I'm ticked at you, Sammy.
I'm sorry, man. I guess I owe you one. I'll have to take you out for a round of golf afterwards or something.
There you go. Now, who's the third guy in the corner?
Chad Laprise.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you got three different guys' mindsets in there. Who's going to run the show?
You know, I think Chad's going to take the lead corner spot. He's been my main training partner in this one. He's been doing all my pad work. You know, he's been kind of the closest to me throughout this training camp. So, you know, but so I got Chad with, you know, Chad really knows what's going on in terms of my training, you know, a little more so than Mark. Because Mark's a little bit so busy with, with the kids and stuff like that. He hasn't been in quite as much as Chad. But Mark's got that experience behind him, you know. He knows what he's doing in the corner. He knows when to, you know, when to tell me to calm down, you know. Whereas Chad, you know, hasn't worked as many corners as Hominick.
All right, we got to go here real quick. Here, give me your perfect fight next Saturday night when we get to Winnipeg. What is the perfect fight versus James Krause?
You know, do you remember the Martin Graham fight?
Yeah,
something like that would be nice.
Oh well, all right. Well, for those that haven't seen it, it's actually online. Double check online. It's there. You'll know exactly what Sammy's talking about. Sammy, thank you very much for taking the time. I will see you next Tuesday or Wednesday in Winnipeg.
All right. Take care, Joe.
There you have it. Sammy J. Stout. Follow Sammy online at Sammy J. Stout via Twitter. All right. Coming up after the break, we're going to hear from Tom Wright, the UFC's Director of Operations for Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, and gives a huge update on what's happening way down under, as well as what's happening in Canada. You're listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.
UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome back to UFC Central. I am your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. If you missed our last segment, round one was with Sammy J. Stout. Round two is about to commence with the UFC Director of Operations, Mr. Tom Wright. He handles Canada. He handles the, my goodness, Down Under, Australia, New Zealand, and who knows what else is going on in there. We're actually going to talk about some of the stuff that is happening down there. If you want to lend a hand via Twitter, we'll get to that a little bit later on in the interview. But first things first, Mr. Wright, how are you, sir?
Joseph, I'm well. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. First things first, though, congratulations and thank you on behalf of getting Bill S-209 done with, taken care of, changing the criminal code here in Canada. I know you had a lot of work to do in that, and thank you very much.
Hey, listen, Joe, that's nice of you to say, but even though MMA is a individual sport, getting the criminal code changed was absolutely a team effort. A lot of people started the process before I did. I'd been at it for about 3 years, and you know, we've had people from Rory McDonald to Mark Hominick up in Ottawa to help us talk to senators and members of parliament from all the different parties, and we finally got it over the goal line, to use a football metaphor. So I'm quite happy about it.
You mentioned it wasn't a matter of if, but a matter of when. Did it feel like that way throughout the whole process?
Well, you know, this is, I don't know how much time you've spent trying to change the criminal code, but, you know, it was sort of a new experience for me, and I never really expected it to be a quick process. These government things take time, and frankly, I've had a full civics course about Canadian government. But it just takes its time, and you know what, good things sometimes take time, and as you said at the beginning, it was a matter of if, it was a matter of when, and we're persistent folk, as you well know. I often point out the fact that 12 years ago, there were only two states in the United States and nothing in Canada that ever even regulated this sport, and just yesterday, when the government of Canada made it official for the overturning the ban in the criminal code, we have the state of Connecticut got approved. So it's only one state in the U.S. that isn't regulated, at least doesn't have a commission that's left, and that's New York. And we've got most of the Canadian provinces. And so, you know, we've got a work to do, but we'll continue plugging along.
Are your fingerprints anywhere near New York to try and get it done, or is that strictly, the UFC offices south of the border?
We help a bit, where we can, in terms of connecting people with other people. But that's largely an effort that's led out of Las Vegas, and we've got some great people on our regulatory team, and of course Dana and Lorenzo get involved personally as it relates to New York. But and you know what, right there, I mean it's another example. If it's not a question of if, it's a question of when, and we'll get it over the line. It just takes time.
If, for those that don't know, just watch any of my interviews with Dana White in terms of the minute I mention New York, his body language changes, and we all know who he's talking about, what he's talking about. So just go back, check out sportsnet.ca, and the mere word of the Culinary Union will get Dana White riped up right away. Let's move on from that and talk about Canada once again. Now that it's done and mixed martial arts is official, it's no longer illegal technically in the provinces and, of course, in all the territories, what does this mean? Does it help speed up the situation, for example, in BC or in Saskatchewan or in PEI or in Newfoundland?
Well, you know what, Joe, it does help speed up the process in Saskatchewan. In British Columbia, it just sort of clears up a lot of the ambiguity. The process of changing it in BC had already started. Bill 50 was passed in the Victoria legislature last summer. And they appointed a new commissioner, and that individual is actually in place, effective the last week of May, and actually is coming to UFC 161 in Winnipeg, so I'll get a chance to meet him there. So we're over the hill there. Now, where the impact really occurs is in places like Saskatchewan, where they were kind of on the fence a bit, waiting to see what was going to happen with the criminal code issue. And now that that has clarity, they'll be able to proceed. And they're trying to decide whether to have a municipal approach or a provincial approach. I've told them our feelings on that, and that is we prefer them to go a provincial approach, which is consistent with most of the other provinces. It also provides for that kind of consistent regulatory environment that you'd like to see. But the other impact it has, and going back to BC, is that in the province of BC, when the city of Vancouver decided to have a 2-year test program, they were so concerned about the potential legal ramifications if there was something that happened inside the Octagon, that they had these incredibly onerous indemnification requirements and incredibly egregious insurance requirements that frankly, the only promotion that could sort of afford it was the UFC, which is why after 2 years of testing in Vancouver, there were only two events, and they were ours. The other organizations just couldn't step up for the indemnification. And that was all tied back to this whole notion of the technicalities within the criminal code. So it has a bunch of different effects. And the important thing to remember is that, and I always said this when I went to Ottawa, that while my business card said you know, the UFC, I was really there representing mixed martial arts, because in the end, it was all about getting our sport regulated and sanctioned and legal across the country, not just the UFC.
You're listening to Tom Wright, the Director of Operations for UFC Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. He will go down, and mark my words, as a legend in this sport. He better be in the UFC Hall of Fame. I'll tell Dana White, whether it's this year, next year, 10 years from now, you're going in the UFC Hall of Fame. I don't care what he says.
I doubt it, buddy, but that's nice of you to say.
Well, somewhere, even for a board of directors or something. You deserve it, based on what you've done here since you came on board with the Ultimate Fighting Championship. You've made my life busier but easier. So I owe you an unbelievable amount of gratitude. You have no reason. I sincerely appreciate everything you've done. You talk about a provincial commission, and you know, if you could do it in Saskatchewan, it'd be great. And it makes many people wonder. You look at Alberta, who has one in Calgary, who has one in Lethbridge, who has one in Edmonton. Does that provide some sort of difficult scenario when trying to book events there, because you're dealing with different people? Would you rather have something provincial in Alberta, or does it really make a difference since they've been around for so long?
Well, you know what? You know, we've obviously held events in Calgary with the UFC, and in Edmonton with the WEC. So, you know, I mean, clearly they've got competent people in both the Edmonton Commission and the Calgary Commission. But I think it's always good to have, you know, some level of consistency. And I think that's why I've always been a proponent of a provincial approach to these things. And you know, the way it was set up in Alberta was set up long before I came around. So, you know, maybe in time they'll change. Who knows? But if you're setting out from the onset, and I guess, you know, take a look at British Columbia. They had an option to do it that way, and they decided to go provincially. And I've sat down with a sport minister in Saskatchewan and members of his staff, and I've given them our perspective as to why we think it should be done provincially. And you know, time will tell. I mean, maybe it'll change in Alberta. Who knows? But you know, I think provincially it makes a lot more sense than it does municipally.
That ringing in your ears and in my ears right now are all the fans in Calgary, in Edmonton, and Vancouver that are probably saying, Showdown asked the question, will the UFC be coming to one of these three cities or all three of these cities in the very near future?
Well, you know what? Absolutely, we will be. You know, and it all depends on what your definition of in the very near future is. You know, we have 13 big pay-per-views and 30 events around the world in total on an annual basis, and you know, there's a ton of cities that line up for these things, as you well know, Joe. You know, it's not going to happen this year, but you know, Dana White has said, and I've said it as well, that we will be back to Calgary. And you know, sometimes I get a lot of heat because we didn't come back this year and didn't come back in, you know, 2 or 3 months after UFC 149. But the fact of the matter is, we have to come back when it's right, when we have the right card for that city, because you know, Dana said he would make it right, and I guarantee you he will. We also want to go back to Vancouver. We had two very successful shows there, UFC 115 and UFC 131. And frankly, the good folks at the Canucks Sports and Entertainment were very, very instrumental in helping us you know, make the changes in Victoria for the provincial legislation there. And so we want to go back there. And frankly, we want to come back to Edmonton. But instead of with WC, we'd like to take the UFC there. So, you know, and then you talk about Saskatoon, you talk about Regina, you talk about Ottawa, you talk about Quebec City, you talk about
so many of them.
There's a ton of them. So the quick answer is yes, we will. But it depends on your definition of in the not too distant future.
And next weekend is the next pay per view for the Ultimate Fighting Championship, UFC 161, Henderson versus Evans in Winnipeg. I'm excited to go down there, but the one thing that, you know, anything east of Toronto feels like it's cursed. I could just imagine what the UFC brass and the matchmaking team goes through when you start seeing these injuries and you get the call that another guy has dropped off the card. It's a weird sort of curse. I don't believe it's a curse, but based on my Twitter following, they're just going absolutely nuts. It's difficult to deal with, I'm sure, but I tell people all the time, Tom, look at this card. It's still a good card. You can't tell me that it's not a great card, and you're disrespecting the fighters that are competing on the card by saying the card is no longer worth buying.
Yeah, it's a great card. I mean, but the truth is, and listen, I'm disappointed about you know, Henan Barao and Andy Wineland. Actually, I was very much looking forward to that fight. I was out in Winnipeg with those guys for our pre-sale press conference, and you know, spent a bunch of time with them. They're terrific, you know, athletes. They're great young men. And I was really looking forward to seeing Hennin fight again, because he, remember, he fought in Calgary, and when I'm forgetting who got injured out there. It was
in Calgary.
Yeah,
it Jose, was Jose Aldo and Eric Koch.
Yeah, when Jose Aldo got injured, so he ended up fighting there, and in the end, I'm disappointed, and I'm sure the fans are disappointed. But like you said, I mean, I think that in the end, you know, you take a look at this card, and Rashad Evans versus Hendo is a terrific matchup. People have been wanting to see that for a long time, and if you don't think Big Country is going to put on a show in Winnipeg against Stipe Miocic, you're crazy. That's going to be a war. Stipe has won. I think he's won 8 in a row, 7 by knockout, and everybody's seen what Big Country's been able to do. And frankly, you know, we're going to have a chance to see the first ever women's fight in Canada when Alexis Davis takes on Rosie Sexton. So, you know, and then there's 7 Canadians in total on the card. So, you know, I'm excited for it. And injuries are a part of this sport. They always will be. They're a part of every professional sport, and particularly ours, because these guys train hard. But, you know, in the end, I think we'll put on a great show, and the fans of Winnipeg won't be disappointed.
We've got about a minute to go here in the segment here. I want to ask you 2 quick questions. I'll let you fire off. A, any update on the Ultimate Fighter Canada, and B, explain #ClickForVic.
Come to Winnipeg, and you'll know more about the Ultimate Fighter Canada, and that's all I'll say. And then the #ClickForVic, as you mentioned at the top, I and my team are responsible for Australia, New Zealand as well now, and in Victoria, the state of Victoria, it's somewhat analogous to Ontario a couple of years ago, where we've got regulatory challenges, and we want nothing more than to take our first ever fight to the city of Melbourne. They call themselves the ultimate sports city, but they haven't had the ultimate sports fighting championship yet. And so ClickForVic was a call to action for people to go onto a website, go onto our Facebook page, and take a look at the conversation we're having, because there, believe it or not, Joe, professional mixed martial arts is regulated and sanctioned, but they only allow it in a boxing ring. And we can't, for the life of us, understand that. We will never, the UFC will never allow for one of our events to handle in a boxing ring. Boxing ring is designed for boxing. It's not designed for mixed martial arts, and it never was, and never should have been. So we're trying to change that. Another regulatory challenge that is on our list, and so that's what the ClickForVic is all about.
Have them call me. I'll explain the differences between a cage and a ring and why it's so much more dangerous in a ring. Well, it depends on where you go, if you have the right security, but that's another story for another day. Thank you very much for the time, and I will be all over Mr. Tom Wright when I get to Winnipeg to find out more of the Ultimate Fighter Canada. Mr. Tom Wright, thank you very much.
Anytime, Joseph. See you at West.
There you have it, Mr. Tom Wright, of course, UFC Director of Operations for Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. And I do want to say one thing. I don't mind mixed martial arts in a ring. Never have. Just watch the MFC. But there are some events out there that don't put the rings together properly with the space and the ropes, and those are the dangerous ones. So that's a story for another day. We'll get to that some other time. Coming up after the break, Damon Martin from the Bleacher Report will talk all about the mixed martial arts headlines over the past 7 days. You're listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.
Prices like no other, from a club like no other, the Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome back to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. As always, the boys behind the glass. Danny Riccio dressed up to the nines. I think he's got a date tonight. He's got his haircut, collar hanging out of the black sweater, looking slick. And then, of course, Igor Enriquez trying to get in the microphone to stop me from talking with his T-shirt. It's a Jordan T-shirt. His head on backwards. His hat on backwards. His head's always on backwards. What kind of hat is that? Who? Yankees. Wow. Wow, at a Toronto Blue Jays, home of the Toronto Blue Jays, Fan 590, you're the Sportsnet Fan, you ring a Yankees hat. We can no longer be friends. Actually, you and Jeff and a whole bunch of other guys are huge Yankees fans, I assume, but it is what it is. Special thanks to 40 Sons for that song, Hurricane, the anthem to UFC Central Radio. You can download that tune on iTunes, as well as every single broadcast of UFC Central Radio. Or you can visit sportsnet.ca/590 and check it out there. Special thanks. Round one, Sammy J. Stout. Round two, Tom Wright. And now round three, the final round here on UFC Central, joined by Bleacher Report's Damon Martin, one of the good guys out there. I just tweeted he's a legend because I believe he's a legend, because half the stuff this guy does, he travels around North America in his vehicle. He's been doing it for the past like 10, 15 years. The guy's an absolute nutcase. He's the feature writer for Bleacher Report MMA and UFC.com, columnist for the Nerd Machine, leader of the Nerdcore movement, in love with his beautiful lady, Taylor. That's his bio on Twitter. Follow Damon on Twitter, at Damon Martin. Damon, what's going on, my man?
I'm good, Joe. How's everything with you?
I don't know. Nothing really happened over the past 7 days in the world of mixed martial arts, so I'm not sure what you and I are going to talk about.
Nothing ever happens. That's the thing. We just have to fill things with random interviews and hope that something breaks. That's what we have to do on this. That's what we have to do these days.
Pretty much. Is every card in Canada west of Toronto cursed?
You know, I really think so. It's funny. I actually written like two articles this week talking about that when UFC 161 just started to fall apart. I was like, man, this is really creepy how much this is just reminiscent of UFC 149. I mean, it's literally the exact same things happening time after time after time. I seriously think that Western Canada is just bad luck for the UFC right now.
Yeah, it's driving me nuts because no one likes going out to Western Canada more than I do, because it's a part of the country I don't have much time to get out there. But, man, I'm going out to Winnipeg. Are you going out there?
I will not be at this one, but I wish I could. I love Canada. I love when I travel. I'll be in Toronto in September, of course, but can't make the trip for this one. But, you know, I love that area, and I know the fans are really passionate about the sport. So I feel bummed for them more than anything.
Well, to be truthful, I still like this card. I have no interest. I know Shogun's gone, Nogueira's gone. I know the original main event between Wineland and Barao is gone. I still like this card.
You know, I do too. I mean, I love the main event. You know, I think that Henderson and Evans is going to be a fantastic fight. I'm a big fan of that one. You know, I love the fact that they added Roy Nelson. I think that was a big deal. I'm glad, really glad now that they added him, especially since they lost Shogun and Nogueira. I love the Pat Barry, Sean Jordan fight. I think that's going to be a fun fight. I'm really excited to see Alexis Davis in the UFC. And I think the feature fight on FX, the feature prelim fight between Tyron Woodley and Jake Shields, is fantastic as well. So there's still some really good fights on this card. It's just, unfortunately, they've lost their title fight. They lost some star power. So, again, just some of the extra cachet that went along with the card, that's really what's fallen off, in my opinion.
And for you Canadian listeners out there, when he says FX, it will air on Sportsnet coast to coast. That's going to be a great card. I'm looking forward. TJ Grant, I just got word, will be my co-host for the full week, including all the preview shows, weigh-in show, and of course, Monday's episode of UFC Central. And speaking of TJ Grant, what went through your mind when you saw him defeat Gray Maynard a couple weeks ago?
You know, what's funny is I talked to TJ right after that fight, and I actually picked him to win that fight, but I thought it was going to be just a three-round, you know, grueling war between two lightweights. And to see him put Gray Maynard away that way was not only impressive, but just surprising, because, you know, Gray Maynard's only has one loss and only has been finished once, and that was in his fight with Frankie Edgar, and that was, I believe, in the fourth round,
yep.
You know, after he had really, you know, really put it on Frank early in the fight. And by the time the fourth round really, you know, rolled around, he was pretty worn out, let's be honest. For TJ to go out there and finish him that dramatically in the first round, not only does it make a statement that he was the number one contender, but that's a big, big statement, beating a guy like Gray Maynard that quickly. So not only does he deserve the shot, but I think he served notice to Benson Henderson that he's for real and he's coming for that gold.
This Saturday, Big Nog, Fabrício Werdum from Brazil. Is this a case where Big Nog, I mean, the first fight was in 2006. Big Nog, obviously, in his prime. Werdum, they're only separated by 13 months. So the age difference is one thing. But in terms of MMA mileage, I think Big Nog has had way too much on him, and I think this could be Verdum's fight.
You know, I agree. I'm picking Werdum, but I'll throw in one factor just to make people think a little bit about this one. You know, Nogueira has done so well in Brazil, and I know that Brendan Schaub and Dave Herman are not the top of the top of the heavyweight division. No one's claiming that they are. But at the same time, there's a certain energy, a certain fuel that Nogueira gets from this Brazilian crowd. And even Fabrício Werdum, when I talked to him last week, told me that you know, he expects the crowd to be on Nogueira's side. Nogueira's a legend in that part of the country. So he fully expects the crowd to be on Nogueira's side. And I think that's going to fuel him a little bit. So do I think it's going to push him all the way to a victory? No, I'm still picking Fabricio Werdum to win. But I think that energy, that is a real thing. When a crowd gets behind him like that, I think that Nogueira feeds off that. And I think he will stick around in this fight and make it a fun fight.
Yeah, I penned an article for Sportsnet.ca and made it clear. I think Werdum does have the edge in this fight, but the only way to beat Big Nog is either to knock him out or a la Frank Mir and tear his arm off. So I think if he can't finish Big Nog, this thing's going 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's a tough fight. I mean, let's be honest. Nogueira, Nogueira is not the same guy he was 10 years ago. You know, it's kind of crazy to think. When I did my article about Nogueira this week, I realized he won the Pride heavyweight title in 2001. I mean, that just seems crazy to me. It just doesn't seem like it was that long ago. But, mm-hmm. I mean, that's 12 years ago when he was the best heavyweight in the sport. So a lot has changed since then. Nogueira is obviously not the fighter he once was, but you know, he's still a tough guy. I mean, you look at that fight with Frank Mir when he literally got his wing ripped off. He was seconds away from winning that fight. You know, we kind of forget that he had knocked Mir down and was on the verge of winning when Mir, really recovered and ended up getting him in that submission. So, Nogueira's looked good. He says he's healthy. He says his body's feeling better than it has in a long time. So if we trust in that, he could make it a fun fight.
You're listening to Damon Martin right here on UFC Central Radio. You can follow Damon online at Damon Martin. Eric Silva, he's returning to the octagon since his loss to John Fitch, and I know this will be version 2.0. He's a fighter that many of us he's had us all excited until he ran into John Fitch. John Fitch no longer with the Ultimate Fighting Championship. This is Eric Silva version 2.0, in my opinion. What are you expecting from Eric?
You know, I like Eric Silva, and the thing is with the John Fitch fight, I don't even think that was really a bad loss. He made Fitch fight his fight and really made that an exciting fight. Eric Silva, not only is he a dynamic, explosive welterweight, he's also a huge welterweight. He is a very, very big kid for welterweight. He walks around, I believe he's 5'11". He probably walks around about 195 pounds. So he's a very big kid. I think he's a guy kind of in the same mold as a very, very good young up-and-coming Canadian by the name of Rory McDonald, just a big, physically strong welterweight. And I think he's going to do well. His fight coming up this weekend against Jason High. Jason is a wrestler. He's probably going to try to do similar to what John Fitch did, which is take him to the mat, put him in the clinch, and keep away from his power. I like Jason High, but the problem is I don't know that Jason High has the kind of top control that John Fitch did. John Fitch, to me, had the best top control in the welterweight division, short of George St. Pierre, who is the best. And he couldn't keep Eric Silva down. He struggled to keep him down, and that's why that ended up being such a dynamic, such a fun fight. I don't know that Jason High can do that. So this could be a pretty explosive performance for Eric Silva.
And the other thing about John Fitch is this guy cannot be choked out by a rear naked choke, and Eric Silva tried on numerous occasions. So that's one thing that Jason High will have to watch out for. And speaking of watching out for things, Rampage Jackson, obviously in the news, signing with Bellator, and who knows what's next for him in terms of what's expected with TNA and the whole situation with the television network. When you first heard this news, I'm sure for many of us it was slightly expected, but now that it's all out there, have you digested it all, and what do you think?
You know, I'm kind of torn on this whole thing because, I make no bones about it. Rampage at 35 years of age, or he's getting ready to turn 35 years of age. You know, his knees are not what they once were. His desire has always been a little questionable in terms of how much does he want to get in the training room? How much does he have left? When you look at the three losses in a row, he lost to John Jones. Okay, there's no shame in losing to John Jones. Everybody has. He lost to Ryan Bader. He talked about his knee was injured in that fight, but that was just really an ugly fight. And then again, he lost to, he lost to Glover Teixeira on the way out. I'm not sure what Rampage has left. And when you hear the conference call that happened yesterday, what worries me a little bit was, he said that the UFC pushed him back into fights and, really tried to get him to come back earlier than he was ready. And, Bellator is going to allow him to sit out and really wait for this knee to rehab. And I have no problem. I don't want someone to come in at 50% or feel like they have to fight. Because, that's what they're being made to do. But at the same time, I just kind of get the sense with Rampage that he would gladly, do his pro wrestling thing, maybe work on this movie deal with Paramount and work on this reality show. And, again, they didn't put a timeline on it. Just the way it sounds, it's like, when is he going to fight in 2013? So I don't know. We'll see how it turns out. But Rampage has been a bit of a troubled employee for a lot of people in the past. He's happy right now. Let's just see how long that lasts.
And I concur with that assessment. At UFC 160, Dana White said BJ Penn should retire. BJ Penn has come out in the past couple of days and says he's looking at coming back at lightweight, which obviously, in my opinion, is a division where he should have been all along. What do you make of this whole BJ Penn situation? Should he retire or compete at least one more time?
You know, I'd like to see BJ come back again at lightweight, so long as it is at lightweight, because he really had no business being a welterweight. You know, you look at his last three fights, you know, John Fitch was a draw. He was very close to winning that fight until the third round. You know, Nick Diaz, he took the first round from Nick Diaz, and then he just, you know, he just got obliterated in the last two rounds. And then Rory McDonald really picked him apart at that point. I think we all knew, you know, BJ really had no business being in there with a top 170-pounder. I'd like to see him make one run back if he can stay motivated, if he can get his body in shape and he can really get some good training in. I would like to see him make one final run at lightweight. You know, coming in, BJ is a guy who needs top competition. He's just not a guy that you can feed to an up-and-comer or some prospect and think that that's going to be something that's going to excite BJ Penn. So, you know, my suggestion yesterday was BJ Penn against Gilbert Melendez. I think that would be a great fight. That fight almost happened in Strikeforce a year ago when they needed somebody to go over and fight Gilbert. The other suggestion I threw out was Gray Maynard. You know, Gray's coming off a tough loss. What better way to jump back in the deep end of the lightweight division than to face a legend? And for BJ Penn, you know, if he beats Gray Maynard, that's a pretty big statement for him as well. So I think he should try it if he's motivated, but I think it's going to have to be against the top guy because I just don't see him getting up for Evan Dunham or even a young prospect like Khabib Nurmagomedov. They both kind of threw out the challenge to BJ. I just don't see BJ being excited for those fights.
No, I don't see him taking on either one of those two guys. Real quick here, what do you make of this whole John Fitch situation with World Series of Fighting in the recent conference call? I mean, everybody was on there just ripping in to the UFC. Does this turn into a situation where the UFC and Dana White will start going after WSOF?
You know, I don't think they'll go after WSOF. You know, I think they'll go after the individual fighters who are going after them. You know, I think Dana has respect for Ray Sefo, and obviously he works a lot with Ali Abdelaziz, the matchmaker, because, you know, Ali obviously manages a lot of fighters in the UFC as well. I don't think he'll go after the WSOF, but I think, you know, he will, you know, defend his organization against the fighters that attack him. I mean, I don't think he really cares a whole lot about Jacob Volkman, not an insult to Jacob Volkman, but I don't know that people are going to hear his voice as loudly, but people will listen to John Fitch. John Fitch was in the UFC for many, many years. He fought for titles there. He was a top 10 guy for many years. So his voice will ring a little louder, and I'm sure Dana, you know, will probably listen to that a little bit more.
Listen, man, I want to thank you very much for your time, for coming on to the show. I still have about 12 more bullet points here, which we'll have to discuss in person. But thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Joe, always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
There you have it, the legendary Damon Martin. You can follow Damon online at Damon Martin for some of the greatest stuff in the world of mixed martial arts. Special thanks to Damon. Special thanks to Tom Wright. Special thanks to Sammy J. Stout and my pals behind the glass, Danny Riccio and Igor Enriquez. You've been listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.